This is our fifth annual Beltane service. Beltane is the Celtic holiday that celebrates fecundity, bodies, fertility, embodiment. And I always take the first Sunday in May to share with you something about our bodies. We've talked about body image and sexuality. We talked about pornography. We've done a Me Too service last year where people came forth to express their engagement and their own personal issues. And 1 year, 2 years ago, I asked you to do the hokey pokey with me. And a great number of you did. But don't worry, no hokey pokey today. But we are going to start out with a warm-up, because I want your bodies to be engaged in the service today. So it's a pretty simple warm-up. You don't even need to stand up. We're going to do it sitting down. So let's have everyone take a deep breath. And take another deep breath, but this time let it out with a sigh. And then give one of your hands a little shake. One of your arms, one of your hands, give it a little shake. And shake out the other one. Shake out one of your legs. Shake out the other leg. Shake out what it is you're sitting on. Good job. Now let's shake out our voices and our faces. Oh, you guys are so good with this. Take a deep breath and let it out with a sigh. So I want to tell you about what it's like for me reading the paper in the morning. I'm generally sitting outside on my patio in good weather, have my little iPad in front of me. I read the New York Times on my iPad. So this is pretty much what it's like for me. The truth is, none of that happens. Really, what happens is me sitting there. But it should happen. It should happen. We hold emotion in our bodies. Every story that I read and that in that newspaper, I take it in. Every trauma that I hear about in the news causes all of us a physical reaction. And it's all in us. And to handle that container of all of that, we tend to become detached from what's going on with our bodies. We've learned hundreds of years ago in Western Europe, there was an idea that came out of the Enlightenment that the body and the mind were separate things. What goes on? Of course, the brain regulates, but the emotions that we feel have nothing to do with what's going on in our body. The thoughts that we have are disconnected from our body. But right now, in our world of globalized awareness of the stress that we're taking in, I think that this disconnection with our bodies is making us ill in so many ways. It has for years, but now in particular, I think we're struggling even more. And to be resilient in this world, to live in this world as an engaged person, we need to learn how to release the stuff that we hold. We need to learn to reclaim our body wisdom. So the reading talked a little bit about the science and the role of science in understanding body-mind connections. The good news is neuroscience is in a new frontier. Because we have all these ways of measuring brain activity, we're understanding more about the connections between the mind and body. And some of the research is actually useful and interesting. Some of the favorite ones that I came up with was a study of couples where long-term couples, they'd get them together and they'd have them argue with each other, all wired up. And they learned generally the expression of anger caused heart distress. And they learned that the expression of frustration or despair caused your guts to be all knotted up. Science has also decided there's a such thing as emotionally induced heart failure. Imagine the gambler who gambles away his entire life savings in one moment, collapses on the table dead, emotionally induced heart failure. What we're also learning is that the connections between the gut, the stomach, the intestines, and the brain are much richer and deeper than we ever understood. The vagus nerve runs from the brain down to our guts and connects with many of our critical organs on its way down, including the heart. But what's really interesting about it is that 10% of the neural pathways run from the brain down to the gut, and 90% run from the gut back up to the brain. Our intestines are the largest sensory organ in our body, and they're really the most important advisor for the control center up here. You all know those kinds of feelings, right? We call it a gut feeling. When we're going to do something that we know is morally wrong, those of us who are wired appropriately may have a gut feeling that this is not right. We talk about spilling your guts. I have to tell all these things. Our bodies are deeply connected. Studies have shown, and body wisdom has shown, that depression and anxiety are linked with irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory problems. But which causes which? Maybe they're reinforcing of the other. A word I want to bring into our time this morning is psychosomatic. It's a simple word. It means mind and body. Psycho being of the mind, soma being of the body. Mind and body. But it's actually, in our culture, quite a loaded term. It reflects this idea of duality, that the mind and the body are different parts of who we are. It's either the mind or the body, but it's not both, right? If you're told by your doctor that your illness is psychosomatic, the implication is that there's nothing that she can do for you. But it's not just in your head. We know our bodies are repositories of emotions, hold pain and challenge in a variety of ways. So it's possible that your back pain, tight or spasming muscles, years of holding something, years of bearing some difficulty, may play out in profoundly physical ways. So why do we consider that a failure? People who have back pain, they want surgery. They don't want to be told, you're holding on to some trauma, and you need to have a process of releasing that trauma from your body. We feel that that's a failure. We feel that we're weak. But we're not weak at all. The body has been doing this amazing job for you, holding on to all these things that have happened to you, protecting you from them. But now it's coming out through your back, through your neck, through your guts. This duality idea of mind and disconnected from body also plays out for people who have some of these really hard to treat diseases like fibromyalgia or chronic fatigue syndrome. The medicine can't figure out something that's wrong with them, and so they tell them that it's all in their head and there's nothing that they could do for them. Well, they do have pain. They have bodily symptoms. These are the ultimate mind-body connected diseases, and our medical institutions don't even know where to begin to help these people. I also love the placebo effect, because it's really confusing the medical establishment. The placebo effect is incredibly, incredibly strong. In fact, it's so strong that it's causing problems for some studies of drugs. Because some people who are given a medicine or a treatment, even though it has no efficacy, as they say, no effect, they still get better because they believe they're going to get better. Powerful, powerful placebo effect that medicine is actually trying to figure out how to harness it. We can really learn a lot about mind-body connections by looking at how humans process trauma. The title of the service today, The Body Keeps the Score, it comes from a psychiatrist named Bessel van der Kolk. I highly recommend this book if you're interested in trauma and the body. So he talks a lot about how we manage as humans prolonged or extreme trauma. Childhood sexual abuse, war, torture, these high-end, horrible traumas that we experience. And if these traumas are not processed, or if they happen when you're very young, your body absorbs them and holds them. It can come out in two different ways. Traumatized people who haven't processed their trauma can be very hypervigilant. We see this in post-traumatic stress disorder, military veterans, hypervigilant, always prepared for the next bad thing that's going to happen. Other people, particularly early childhood sexual abuse, can become disassociated from their own bodies. They don't have any awareness of their bodies. But the hypervigilant people have to let it out at some point. And these are the stories you hear about people putting their fist right through a wall. The body is getting out what they, you can't stay hypervigilant all the time. Whereas the disassociated people will often cut themselves or pick at their bodies until they bleed. It seems really sad, it seems really harsh and difficult, but it's the only way they know how to make themselves feel anything, and can be a tremendous release of stress and tension for those who are disassociated from their bodies. Of course, another excellent way that people use to manage trauma is by drugs and alcohol, numbing themselves. Because if you don't release the trauma from your body, it's there in you, and it comes out in a variety of ways. Most trauma victims have physical problems, headaches, back pain, stomach difficulties for years and years and years. It's part of the package. The good news is that research on the mind-body connections are really revolutionizing the way that people are treating trauma victims, because they're understanding that you can't just do one kind of therapy, like mind therapy or drugs. You have to involve the body in the healing process. Yoga has become a really important part for soldiers with PTSD. Practicing yoga, getting in touch with their body, and learning how to regulate their breathing. Therapeutic touch can be very helpful for those who are disassociated from their body. Massage or just connecting physically with another person really helps rebuild and helps you release what it is that you're holding on to in a safe place. But the message of the mind-body connection is not just for trauma victims. They give us the excellent extremes that we can reflect on and get ideas on how to help. But it's not just for trauma victims. There's actually a continuum from everyday things that we take in, like reading the New York Times in the morning, to the extreme levels of trauma that people experience. People living in poverty or oppressive systems, racism, you know, everyday difficulties, they carry these things in their body. Anyone who's worked in a really oppressive work environment knows very well it comes out in headaches and backaches and stomach pain. The body takes it all in. What we need is to think about ways that we can release all these everyday traumas and challenges that we're holding. But I also want to acknowledge that you've just heard a lot of difficult things and you've taken those in. So we're going to take a break. Those of you who are willing to stand up, it's going to be very simple, nothing to worry about. Let's all stand up. We're going to do something similar to what we did before, but you're going to have a little more freedom. Let's take a deep breath and let it out with a sigh. Oh, let's do that again. Now let's shake out your arms. You can reach up to the sky if you want. Shake out what you've been sitting on. Twist a little bit, like we did last summer. And let's take another deep breath and let it out with a sigh. Ah. Okay, bodies, you can sit down now. All right, this is the part everybody will like, because it's the practical, what are we going to do about it part. How do you know what your body needs? So in Inner Play, we talk about body data, body knowledge, and body wisdom. Body data is all those things that are coming in at you all the time, all those awarenesses that you have. You're pretty good at body data. When it's cold, you might put on a sweater, right? You know when your body's cold, you know when it's hot, hopefully you know when you're thirsty, you know when you're tired. This is all the body data that is you're taking in, you're processing, all your awarenesses about what's going on in your body. So feel yourself in your seat right now. You're collecting some body data. Are there little owies in your body somewhere, maybe tight shoulders? This is all the body data that's available to us all the time, our body is telling us. And we collect that, whether consciously or unconsciously, and that forms what we call body knowledge. So, for example, sleep is a good example of body knowledge. You wake up at a certain time every night for a while, and then you realize, huh, I seem to be waking up every night at 3 o'clock in the morning. So you've noticed the patterns, you've collected. Or I know when I go to a conference somewhere that I'm always cold, so I need to bring a sweater. I've collected the body data and I've developed some body knowledge. But it's body wisdom where you're really putting that knowledge into practice. So the body wisdom might be, I wake up at 3 a.m., I realize I'm doing that, so I'm going to try to find some practice that helps me so that I can sleep through the night. You're learning, putting body wisdom into practice. So let's work on an example of that that will help us in dealing with emotions that are in our body. How many of you know what stress feels like? Okay, so call it out. What does it feel like? Where do you feel it? Okay, so you know what stress feels like, right? You've collected body data about stress. You may even have some body, well, you have body knowledge because you know, and you may even have some wisdom about what to do when you're under stress. What's the opposite of stress? Tell me, ease? Did someone say ease? Yeah, some other words for opposite of stress. Peaceful, relaxed. What's it feel like in your body? The opposite of stress. It feels like what I felt like when the Threshold singers were singing. Oh, that's the opposite of stress. So what would be the body wisdom here? You know what stress feels like, and you know what the opposite of stress feels like. What would be the body wisdom here? Find ways to give yourself more of what the opposite of stress feels like. And one way to get to that place is what in Inner Play we call exformation, the opposite of information. Information is taking in all that, right? Me reading the newspaper, taking in all that trauma, difficulty, challenge, pain, and finding a way to let it out. Exforming it, releasing it from the body. The simplest way to exform is by breathing. And we even know through science that the nervous system that's involved in breathing, the sympathetic nervous system is involved in the intake, get your heart rate going a little faster, but it's the parasympathetic that's involved in the out-breath, and it slows your heart down. Long, slow exhales slow your heart down and calm you. Breathing into that place of what no stress feels like. Other ways to exform are activities that release energy from the body, such as physical activities. Anything repetitive is really helpful. Repetitive activities. Needlework can be knitting. You've probably seen people knitting at meetings. They knit a little faster when the meeting gets tense, and they knit a little slower when the meeting, but they're exforming. They're taking in, they're listening, they're hearing, but they're letting it out through their needles. That's a quiet, simple way to let out energy. But so is bike riding and walking and anything where you're not having to track what you're doing, but you're letting your mind go free. Where all that stuff in you can just percolate up and let itself out. Kind of like what dreaming does for us, but during the day. You're moving your body, you're engaging in ways that releases the energy, releases the emotion that you've captured. You should do it every day. You should do something like that every day. And you should learn how to notice when your body needs to release tension or stress and find something to do that for you. Something simple as breathing. Body data, body knowledge, body wisdom. If you take anything away from my time with you this morning, I'd like it to be to honor your body wisdom. If your body is telling you that it needs something, it knows, and you should respond to it. Make time each day to release whatever it is that your body has taken in. It's all you, your body, your mind, your spirit, and it's all yours. These are your partners in life. And it's your life. So take good care.